And welcome back to another edition of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO Radio. I'm going to be joined today by not only Mary Meyer from the U of M, but our friend John Traffy, who's our turf expert. Well, not ours, but we like to claim him as ours from the University of Minnesota. Good morning, Mary. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Denny. We're finally in garden season here.
Boy, I guess. Yeah, and lawn season, too. Boy, do I need help. I think John should come over to my house specifically. Yeah, exactly. It was quite a summer, quite a year last year. If you have, but we're going to be busy today, not that we aren't always, but if you have specific lawn questions, John will be answering those questions. And, of course, any other kind of lawn or garden question, too, Mary Meyer will be helping you out. And we started getting text messages, I think, about 4 hours ago. Or so on our text message. And I know a lot of people, including me, have the same question. I'll just read what the listener says. Good morning. I was wondering if today would be a good day to start planting tomatoes and peppers if I live up in the Big Lake area. Thank you very much. I really enjoy the show. Thank you for that. And, yeah, I was thinking about the same thing, at least this weekend. The nighttime lows just this weekend now, meaning tonight and tomorrow night, will be in the 50s. And all the rest of the way this week, they'll be in the 60s overnight lows. What do you think?
I think it's okay now once we got through last night. So, yeah, in the 50s is okay. 40s is really chilly. So tomatoes, like, they're a warm season crop. They like the warm weather and especially warm nights. Peppers like it even less when it gets cold. But I think we're over the worst now, and hopefully we'll be in the 50s or even in the 60s at nighttime temperatures. So I think that it's okay. Now, Big Lake that's further north. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are people who wait until after Memorial Day to put in their, what I think of as the tropicals or the warm season vegetables and plants. And there's really nothing wrong with waiting till after Memorial Day because the chilling effects are really noticeable on tropical crops. You can actually set back your plants if they're chilled. And chilling isn't freezing. Chilling is in the 40s and 50s. So if you have any doubt that it's cooler and you're up north, I'd wait one more week. But I think for central Minnesota and southern Minnesota, probably okay now.
John, I was thinking about, you know, lawns, and I know last year anyway, like a lot of folks, I was trying to conserve on water, and I think the trade-off was a lot of my grass died. And what do you do about that? There's some really good sections yet, but and I never thought I would think about power raking. And I don't even know if that's a good idea, but it's certainly raking some of the dead stuff up, opening up some of that soil and reseeding. What do you think? What advice can you give folks like me?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I saw some of that in my own lawn. And what I did is I, you know, where I just had some winter kill or some things that areas that died from last year. And really what you do is you can go out and lightly rake the area that if it is still dead, because if it hasn't greened up by now, it's probably not going to. So I would go out and lightly rake that area and try to expose the soil surface. You can overseed some grass seed in the area to try to encourage it. And then, you know, really just try to prepare your lawn for the next, you know, this summer and this next coming drought. Just raise the mowing height, make it a little bit more drought tolerant, and prepare for, you know, maybe another harsh summer or maybe not. But regardless, you know, your lawn can be a little bit more resilient if you do those steps now.
Very good. Listener says, I'm planning on reusing my potting soil from last year, but there are lots of small roots in the soil. Are they okay, or do I need to get rid of them and start over?
I reuse my potting soils, and I just go through them. I try to dump the whole container out, put it on a tarp, or put it in a wheelbarrow. So you get aeration and you actually dry out the soil. Many times it's really wet. Try to remove any roots that are large. Sometimes you'll see the small the root shoot junction, the crown of a plant where you planted it, so you want to take that out. If you've had any disease plants, you want to consider not reusing your soil. But for most plants, if they've been healthy, you can just kind of put it through a strainer or a sieve or something, so you take the big chunks of plants out. Sometimes I refresh it with a little bit of new potting soil or a shovel too, or full of regular soil. I actually put sometimes regular mineral soil from the garden in my pots, but you can definitely reuse it.
Okay. Let's grab a phone call. Lynn is calling in from White Bear Lake this morning, I believe. Good morning, Lynn. What is your question?
Good morning. I have a couple questions. I have a hydrangea. It's called Pink Sunset. And I'm wondering if that's a perennial.
Yes, I would guess it is. Most hydrangeas are perennial for us. Occasionally you get one that's a florist hydrangea that really isn't. But there are actually hundreds, I'm hesitant to say almost thousands now, of different kinds of hydrangea. There's been kind of a breeding frenzy with commercial breeders, and so we have so many different kinds. So, yes, I would assume it's a perennial. Now, some hydrangeas are a little slow to come up in the spring. Some of mine are just starting to grow. So I would give it, I'd give it another couple of weeks, and then you can see where it's green and growing, and yes, it should be fine.
John, a listener wants to know the difference between, I can kind of relate to this one too, the difference between crabgrass and quack grass.
So, crabgrass is a summer annual grassy weed. It germinates, germinates in the spring, grows and develops throughout the summer, and then dies in the fall. Quackgrass is a creeping perennial that is a problematic weed. You know, can go pretty much anywhere, and really both of them can be fairly problematic. But one is an annual, one is a perennial. The quackgrass is much more difficult to control than the crabgrass. Crabgrass is really just ensuring a dense, healthy turf, and you'll just gradually thin out the crabgrass over time by just making an area less likely to have it. If you have quackgrass, it's particularly pretty tough to get rid of.
I put in a whole bunch of new sod in the backyard last year. It's doing really well, but I noticed that, and I'm glad this listener brought that up, that these are these blades of what I think are grass, some kind of grass, are lighter green, but they're not, you know, they have, it's probably about the, you know, 6-8 inches in diameter they're popping up. Those lighter leaves, is that quack or crabgrass? That's quack grass, isn't it?
Well, both of them do have a little bit lighter leaf color, but lighter green. But I would say if you're seeing them grow significantly taller than the normal mowing height and it grows faster, it's probably quack grass.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. Okay. Well, we'll have to deal with that. Yeah, with such a problem, right? We'll take care of that, and we'll take care of some business here and take a quick break and be right back. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, and we have many on the tech screen, we'll come back for those. 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, 53 degrees. We're heading to 73, and as I mentioned, overnight lows tonight and tomorrow around 52. But the rest of the week, our overnight lows will be in the 60s. You stay with us here. 53 degrees on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour welcoming your lawn or garden questions at 651-461-9226, either by phone or by text. And we have a bunch of both Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the University of Minnesota helping you out with your lawn or garden questions today. And, we've got tons of folks. Let's grab some phone calls before we get back to the text messages. Larry is first up here from West St. Paul, I believe. Thanks, Larry. What is your question?
Good morning. I have two honeysuckles that last year I think had black spot and just about defoliated them. They're both coming back this year. They're greening up. Is there anything I should be aware of or should be doing?
I don't think so. There's a wide variety of honeysuckles. Some of them are more invasive than others, but I would wait and see if you have the same problem show up again. And then if you do, I would take pictures of it and send it into the Ask a Master Gardener line, which is the resource at the Extension Service for answering specific problems. You could also look up online at the extension.umn.edu website and see if you can match up any pictures that are there of your honeysuckle. But normally honeysuckle will be okay. It's usually an easy plant to grow.
Oh, good. All right. Larry, thank you. Joyce, I think, is next. Yeah, Joyce calling in from Hampton, I believe, this morning. Thanks for waiting, Joyce. What is your question?
Yes, I was wondering. I have potted hyacinth and calla lily plants that are done blooming. Can I plant the bulbs now, or what do I do?
You can plant them outside. The hyacinth probably will not rebloom. Calla lily might rebloom, but both of those, just the calla lily, you'll have to bring indoors. That won't survive our winters outside. The hyacinth will, but it might not flower again. You might just see the foliage from it. But the calla lily, you can actually keep that as a plant if you want to take the trouble of bringing it in and storing the bulb through the winter.
Okay. This texture, John said, I did some dormant seeding last fall, and now I wonder if I should find a fertilizer that is food only for the new growth. What do you think?
Food only is, I think, if what the texter is wondering about is whether or not the fertilizer is going to have a weed and feed component or the weeding component, the herbicide included with it. I would definitely encourage you to use a fertilizer that does not have the weed component or the herbicide included. Just make sure that if you did seed last fall, if you are going to use a fertilizer, that it does not contain phosphorus because of the Minnesota phosphorus fertilizer law on lawns. But there's a number of different products out there that do not contain the herbicide that also do not contain phosphorus. So I would just call up your local lawn and garden center or really any place, or go visit them, and I'm sure you won't have any trouble finding a product that would help. But definitely recommend some fertilizer, especially after if they've started germinating, just to make sure that encourage them to get established.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Barb is calling in this morning from Plymouth. Barb, good morning. What is your question for our guest?
I have two questions. The rabbits attacked my burning bush, stripped the bark all the way. Should I just cut them back now, or should I wait till to see if whatever they didn't attack actually flowers out?
This has been the worst year ever for rabbit damage, and they really do seem to love the burning bush. It's just amazing the devastation that's been done with rabbits. I've actually heard that the rabbit population now has decreased significantly because of starvation in the winter, and I'm thinking, how can this be when they ate everything in sight? If you haven't seen, if you don't see new growth on the branches, you can check and do a little bit of pruning, see if you could find any green tissue in there. Maybe wait one more week, but pretty soon you're going to be able to tell what's dead and alive. And burning bush can be pruned back to the ground sometimes and still come back. If it was a healthy plant, it could come back again from the base. So I wait maybe one more week, and then if you don't see green, yeah, you have to prune everything off and decide if you need to start over with a new plant.
Okay, before we have a look at that forecast,
I have a lawn question.
Oh, go ahead.
I have a lawn question. My lawn question is my south side facing the street, which is a green, healthy lawn. It is very bumpy, and when I texted in last week, somebody told me it's probably because of earthworms. how do I deal with that? Because it's difficult to walk on and it's difficult to cut. I have a walk behind lawnmower.
Yeah, that's if it is that bumpy and it's that difficult to walk on, it could very well be earthworms, but generally those don't cause such an issue. But regardless, what I would consider doing is potentially either if you don't have a roller yourself, or if you do have a, you could potentially contract a company that has a roller that's just basically a heavy drum that they fill with water to come out and smooth if it's that uneven and it's that uncomfortable to even walk on. Another alternative is that you could potentially top dress with some soil if it's very kind of localized, if it's a very small area. You could just go out and lightly spread a layer of soil over time to try to smooth out that area because the grass will just continue to grow up through it. But generally, the earthworms are kind of a good thing, and we don't necessarily want to discourage them because they help aerify the soil naturally. So I would, even if it is the earthworms, I would just try to let them be, but try to, help smooth things out after the fact.
Okay. I think we have time before the weather to grab another phone call. Harold in Roseville has been waiting to ask a question. Harold, thank you. What is your question?
Good morning. I have a question regarding chipmunks and squirrels digging in my pots and planters. Is there anything I can do to discourage them? I think I heard somewhere that you could use a certain kind of mulch. I don't know if it was a coconut shell mulch or what it was. Is there anything I can do to discourage them from digging in my pots and planters?
Oh, this is a good question, Harold, and I'm sure it's a very frustrating one. It's one I've personally had myself. I think actually there are mulches that actually attract these animals. And I don't know if it's the fragrance, the organic matter, or something. Somehow they think this is like a food source for them. And there are different mulches. They're rice hulls, they're coconut mulches. There's lots of different mulches growers are using now in an effort to avoid peat moss, which is a controversial horticultural growing media. But I have not been successful at doing anything other than a physical barrier, which is not going to look so good, but some type of a, there are these nets, netting that you can put over. We see this mostly on fruit trees, so birds don't get in our fruit trees. But unless you put up some type of a barrier so that they cannot get in the pots, I don't know what else to tell you to do. And maybe some of our listeners know things that are mulches that are really good, but it's just, I think that they're looking for food sources and attracted to the growing media itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you what, that is an issue. Let's do this. Let's take a break for weather. We have about another half hour of the show to go. Lawn and Garden Questions at 651. Yeah, that is an issue. Let's do this. Let's take a break for weather. We have about another half hour of the show to go. Lawn and Garden Questions at 651-461-9226. Here on News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, you have Mary Meyer and John Traffy from the University of Minnesota. We're talking lawns and gardens, specifically if you have especially a turf question for John Traffy. This is your day to get that answer. Mary and John, we have so many text messages. Do you have about three more days to spend here? let's see. Where do we go from here? Oh, here's one about a fertilizer using fish parts. Does that make good fertilizer in vegetable gardens?
It probably does. That sounds a little vague on what it is, but yes, the fish emulsion is a fertilizer that you can buy. And yes, that's one of our organic fertilizers. It usually will say on the label what the proportion is of nutrients, but yes, I think that's okay. You know, it's always important to read the label because it will tell you, hopefully, what the actual nutrients are that's in the fertilizer. But I think it should be okay.
I think this listener specifically is a fisher person, and they're talking about, from what I can discern from the text, that they're talking about what they don't eat. Can they put that? You know, so we're talking about real fish.
Yeah, using their own fertilizer. Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's probably okay. Of course, that's historically one of the things that the Native Americans did, realizing that, you know, there are multiple sources of organic matter that will help plants. So, yeah, the thing is there, it depends on the age. So it's all of that fresh organic matter needs to be partially decomposed and incorporated into the soil. So you could put that in there, but I would certainly mix it in with the soil.
Okay. I am reminded that today, would you please announce the Washington County Master Gardeners Plant Sale and Garden Expo from 10 to 3 at the Washington County Fairgrounds. Boy, do they have a nice day for that.
And also, it's Dakota County, Hennepin County, Ramsey Counties. So there's plant sales near you. So, yes, if you want to just Google Plant Sales Master Gardeners Minnesota, I think you'll see a lot of opportunity today. Yes.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. One more, then I have a bunch of turf questions. How do I keep my hanging plants from shriveling up and dying by August?
Well, it's probably water, because anything that's in a container needs water daily once we get to the hot summer. And if it's really in full sun conditions and a small container, it might be twice a day that you have to water it. So watering can be the limiting factor, and you just have to, really pay attention to that.
This listener wants to know your opinion on using corrugated plastic tubes placed on newly planted trees for protection and to accelerate vertical growth. Also, could you comment on the best herbicide to use on the little violet flowering lawn weed, not Creeping Charlie, that is Trimec resistant? Your program on Saturday mornings is excellent.
I'll do the first one. John can do the Trimec one. So protection for trees, especially fruit trees, from rabbits, et cetera, is really helpful. So, yes, I do protection on fruit trees, and I do it for bark frost cracks and bark cracking on thin bark trees like maples. But once they get older, especially the maples, they don't need it. But young trees, yes, you just want to put that on. So it's mostly protection for animals. And as the tree grows, you have to be careful and take it off.
Okay.
And related to the violet flowers, coincidentally is a wild violet plant. So originally an ornamental that was brought here or that's been naturalized. That is a particularly difficult to control weed, but just like you had mentioned, it's not Creeping Charlie, but the same product that we recommend for controlling Creeping Charlie also works very well and is the recommended product for wild violets, and that's triclopyr is the active ingredient in that. So it's not the brand name or the label name. It's the active ingredient that is that's actually working against the wild violet. TRICLOPYR, triclopyr is the active ingredient. Should work pretty well.
Very good. Next question, text question. What steps are next after treating grubs in my lawn? Should I overseed?
Yeah, so grubs, if you have already treated for grubs, typically we recommend doing that a little bit later in the summer. If the caller is referring to putting down a grub preventer, for example, typically we prefer to do that a little bit later in the summer, in late June, early July. But as far as the upcoming steps to do is really just try to, just encourage a healthy lawn. So in terms of, mowing it as it's needed, Trying to raise the mowing height, like I had mentioned earlier, is a great step to do. But otherwise, it's really just allowing the lawn just to grow and enjoy the weather like we are.
Okay. This listener says this: I planted a Regent serviceberry shrub last spring, put wire fencing around it for the winter. Can I take the fencing down now or leave it up until the shrub is larger and more established? The shrub is densely foliated and around 2 by 2 feet right now. Thank you.
Yes, a wonderful plant, the Regent's serviceberry, great for wildlife. Bunnies love this. So the protection really is from the rabbits. And if you have no rabbits, you probably can take off the barrier there. But I actually did the same thing. I got 3 Regents and they look beautiful, but I'm going to leave my barrier up because I have so many rabbits around. So they need to get really well established and be able to take some browsing with the rabbits.
Next text for John. I believe the voles did a lot of damage to my lawn over the winter. I raked up the loose dead grass a couple of weeks ago, but no new grass has come up. What should I do?
At this point, if you still have the trails or the burrows, tunnels from the voles still present, I would, at this point, you've already removed the above ground dead leaf litter. At this point, I would consider fertilizing if it's that much of an issue. I know this year was particularly bad for the voles. I think just, undergoing just a normal spring fertilizer application, and we have some recommendations on the extension.umn.edu site on how to fertilize your lawn and when to do it and how much to fertilize. But I would just consider fertilizing to allow the lawn to try to grow out of it. Otherwise, just try to be a little bit patient. The lawn typically should be able to recover and grow out of that vole damage.
Here's one we get quite often, and I'm sure you do too. How can I get mushrooms out of my lawn where a tree was cut down?
Yeah, so the mushrooms themselves oftentimes are a symptom of what we call fairy ring. So it's just a basidiomycete. Typically, there's no damage. There can be in like golf course type settings or really sandy soil. Sometimes it'll be a little bit hydrophobic and it might dry out a little faster than the rest of the lawn. But generally, the white mushrooms are really harmless. You can go and just step them down if you want or just knock them over as you're mowing. But really, there's really nothing you can do about it. Unfortunately, there's not really any chemical or cultural practices that can really be done. It's a soil-borne fungi.
Okay. This listener says, I planted a new maple tree last July and covered the bottom with wood mulch. This spring, I changed the mulch from wood to rubber mulch. When I took the wood mulch up, there was a lot of small/fine roots that I may have disturbed. Do you think that I damaged the tree?
Hopefully not. The trees really have the majority of their roots in the top, even 18 inches. Young trees do rely heavily on the new root systems and smaller roots that you'll see. But hopefully not. I would still pay attention to watering this plant because of the drought conditions that we had. We still could see plants die this year from the drought conditions from last year. Yeah, so we tend to forget this. So I would pay attention to watering the plant. And, you don't need... Yeah, so we tend to forget this. So I would pay attention to watering the plant. And, you don't need that much mulch on top of the roots. It's better to have a mulch than have your lawnmower go up there and hit the trunk of the tree. So a mulch around the trunk so you don't get near it with a mower is a good idea. But, 1 to 2 inches is enough. And then once you have that down, yeah, just leave it alone.
Okay. Let's take a quick break and be right back with the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show. 651-461-9226. Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the U of M helping you out this morning here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And good morning. Welcome back. to our Smart Garden Show around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Just a reminder, coming along next hour, Andy Lindis will be with us. We'll be talking home improvement. We'll be taking any kind of questions related to home improvement next hour here on CCO. In the meantime, if you just joined us, Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the U of M are answering those questions today. And you know what we haven't mentioned, what I did not bring up, I love to do it because I love to be there, is the Arboretum. This has to be one, well, it's any time really of the year I love to go there, but this has got to be a great time.
It's a fabulous time. The tulips are magnificent this year with many, many different kinds of tulips. I just would say that if anybody goes there to see the tulips, I guarantee you'll find a tulip you didn't see before, because they're just a huge diversity of tulips. That's what the collection is this year, and very bright and colorful. And the crab apples are out, and the lilacs are out, and the red buds are just finishing, and there's so many things to see. So it's a fabulous time to go to the Arboretum. You still do need to make a reservation, but I looked this morning. There are plenty of open slots for making a reservation at the Arboretum. So great spot to visit.
Yeah, do it online, and you will be so glad. You will be making repeat trips, and you might even want to join the Arboretum, become a member. Easy right. to do. And by the way, another thing I know Mary mentioned it earlier today, is great reading, great resource, is the University of Minnesota Extension website. That's extension.umn.edu. Check it out when you have a chance, and I think you'll really enjoy it. I was using it myself this past week for some ideas. In the meantime, let's see how many folks we can help out here before we run out of time. This text says, our city newsletter considers euonymus invasive. Is that right?
Well, there are many different kinds of euonymus, and what's invasive is a plant that will self-seed or come up like buckthorn does. We all know how much of a problem buckthorn is, and many times we are just learning what plants will become invasive. So if your city is saying it's a problem, that's because it's been documented and there's places where they're having to remove it where it wasn't planted. So I'd be very careful about what euonymus you have in your yard, and then watching if you have any kind of wild areas nearby to make sure that it's not coming and growing in those areas.
Here's a text that I wonder if you or John ever heard of this before. Lawn question, my neighbor spread sugar on his lawn as a fertilizer, and it looked healthy and green. I'm afraid it could attract ants. What are your thoughts about using sugar as a fertilizer?
Sugar is actually, it's been used in traditional row crop agriculture as a starter fertilizer for decades. Mm. So as molasses is what is often used. There is actually some benefit that's out there for that. But in terms of a lawn, it's most sugar is broken down or mineralized by soil microbes within a few hours. So the benefit is really marginal. But if you were to... there could be some very marginal benefit if it was like a new establishment, but not necessarily like table sugar. It would have to be a little bit more of a complex sugar substrate like molasses. But even then, it's a little bit messy, and like you said, it might end up attracting other things that you don't necessarily want there.
Interesting. This listener has a large area of dead grass. They were able to pull it up in big chunks, kind of like dead sod. Do you think this was caused by grubs?
It could very well be from grubs. The May-June beetle is the grubs are actively feeding right now up near the surface. Well, really, a lot of different white grubs are. If you pull back that sod that seems to just kind of pull up in really big chunks or rolls of pieces, you should be able to find them, or you'll see paw prints from things like raccoons, possums, skunks that were digging. And that's oftentimes what's rolling those back. So you should be able to see, if you see more than like 6 white grubs or so per square foot, that's when I would consider treating that area in order to try to remove that stress on the lawn.
Okay. Mary, this listener says the bark has been stripped off the largest branches of my lilacs. Do they need removal, do you think?
Oh, it's hard to say. I would just wait and see how they grow. If the bark is totally gone all the way around a branch, then, yeah, usually that means that the branch is going to be dead. Partially, if it's only one side, it might still live. Lilacs are amazing that you can rejuvenate them if the plants are healthy. Around the grass collection where I work at the Arboretum, we have an old lilac hedge, and every few, well, maybe 10 or 15 years, they do what's called renovation or rejuvenation pruning, and prune it down to the ground. And it is healthy and in full sun and in good conditions, and so that's always come back. So if your plant is really healthy, you can take off, cut it back to the ground, and lilacs can rejuvenate if they're healthy plants.
This other listener wants to know, what's the best time to relocate rhubarb plants?
Well, rhubarb is really, usually it's quite tough. I would actually think about moving it in early spring just as it's starting to grow. And then you'll have to wait a couple of years till it gets itself reestablished. But it's it, you know, when you say the southern listener wants to know, rhubarb doesn't grow well in hot conditions. So it's one, rhubarb and lilacs, these are the things we can grow well in Minnesota. So you can't really grow it well in hot conditions, but maybe the person has lived in the South, he's now here, and I would say if you have sunny conditions, you can move it this time of year, but I'm about ready to pick my rhubarb to make some pie.
Oh, I'll be over.
Yeah.
I love that. I think we only have 2 minutes, actually less than 2 minutes now, John and Mary. Let's see if we can't pick up on this one. If we mentioned it earlier. If one has quackgrass, how do we get rid of it?
Unfortunately, quackgrass can only be controlled with a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate. So if you're not keen on trying to kill out everything in that area and trying to replant it, and that's a several months long process because the quackgrass has underground creeping rhizomes that can just take a long time for that herbicide to work through them, and sometimes multiple applications. If you can't wait for that, you don't want to wait for that, sometimes it's really just to can't beat them, join them type of situation, and just accept that it's going to be there.
And as far as pre-emergence, is this the time? Are we past it, or what's the deal with that? A couple of people want to know.
Great question. We're a little bit past the crabgrass pre-emergence or summer annual pre-emergence. So at this point, I would just plan on not applying any. Or if you do, there's some that have pre- and post-activity, like dithiopyr is the active ingredient. But those have kind of marginal activity. I would just focus on good cultural practices going into the summer, and then hit it next fall and having a healthy lawn then.
Excellent. We're out of time. Mary and John, always a pleasure. Let's do this again. Thank you. You guys have a good week. Enjoy the beautiful weather. And we'll talk again
soon. Thank you.
Thanks
so much. Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the University of Minnesota. Now, get those home improvement questions ready. But before we do, check out the University of Minnesota website, extension.umn.edu, and get to the Arboretum. You're going to love it. Home improvement next hour on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Stay with us. And welcome back to another edition of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO Radio. I'm going to be joined today by not only Mary Meyer from the U of M, but our friend John Trappe, who's our turf expert. Well, not ours, but we like to claim him as ours from the University of Minnesota. Good morning, Mary. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Denny. We're finally in garden season here.
Boy,
it's great.
I guess. Yeah, and lawn season too. Boy, do I need help! I think John should come over to my house specifically. Yeah, exactly. It was quite a summer, quite a year last year. If you have, but we're going to be busy today. Not that we aren't always, but if you have specific lawn questions, John will be answering those questions, and of course, any other kind of lawn or garden question too. Mary Meyer will be helping you out, and we started getting text messages, I think about 4 hours ago. or so on our text message. And I know a lot of people, including me, have the same question. I'll just read what the listener says. Good morning. I was wondering if today would be a good day to start planting tomatoes and peppers if I live up in the Big Lake area. Thank you very much. I really enjoy the show. Thank you for that. And, yeah, I was thinking about the same thing, at least this weekend. The nighttime lows just this weekend now, meaning tonight and tomorrow night, will be in the 50s. And all the rest of the way this week, they'll be in the 60s overnight lows. What do you think?
I think it's okay now once we got through last night. So, yeah, in the 50s is okay. 40s is really chilly. So tomatoes, like, they're a warm season crop. They like the warm weather and especially warm nights. Peppers like it even less when it gets cold. But I think we're over the worst now, and hopefully we'll be in the 50s or even in the 60s at nighttime temperatures. So I think that it's okay. Now, Big Lake that's further north.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are people who wait until after Memorial Day to put in their, what I think of as the tropicals or the warm season vegetables and plants. And there's really nothing wrong with waiting till after Memorial Day because the chilling effects are really noticeable on tropical crops. You can actually set back your plants if they're chilled. And chilling isn't freezing. Chilling is in the 40s and 50s. So if you have any doubt that it's cooler and you're up north, I'd wait one more week. But I think for central Minnesota and southern Minnesota, probably okay now.
John, I was thinking about, you know, lawns, and I know last year anyway, like a lot of folks, I was trying to conserve on water, and I think the trade-off was a lot of my grass died. And what do you do about that? There's some really good sections yet, but and I never thought I would think about power raking. And I don't even know if that's a good idea, but it's certainly raking some of the dead stuff up, opening up some of that soil and reseeding. What do you think? What advice can you give folks like me?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I saw some of that in my own lawn. And what I did is I, you know, where I just had some winter kill or some things that areas that died from last year. And really what you do is you can go out and lightly rake the area that if it is still dead, because if it hasn't greened up by now, it's probably not going to. So I would go out and lightly rake that area and try to expose the soil surface. You can overseed some grass seed in the area to try to encourage it. And then, you know, really just try to prepare your lawn for the next, you know, this summer and this next coming drought. Just raise the mowing height, make it a little bit more drought tolerant, and prepare for, you know, maybe another harsh summer or maybe not. But regardless, you know, your lawn can be a little bit more resilient if you do those steps now.
Very good. Listener says, I'm planning on reusing my potting soil from last year, but there are lots of small roots in the soil. Are they okay, or do I need to get rid of them and start over?
I reuse my potting soils, and I just go through them. I try to dump the whole container out, put it on a tarp, or put it in a wheelbarrow. So you get aeration and you actually dry out the soil. Many times it's really wet. Try to remove any roots that are large. Sometimes you'll see the small the root shoot junction, the crown of a plant where you planted it, so you want to take that out. If you've had any disease plants, you want to consider not reusing your soil. But for most plants, if they've been healthy, you can just kind of put it through a strainer or a sieve or something, so you take the big chunks of plants out. Sometimes I refresh it with a little bit of new potting soil or a shovel too, or full of regular soil. I actually put sometimes regular mineral soil from the garden in my pots, but you can definitely reuse it.
Okay. Let's grab a phone call. Lynn is calling in from White Bear Lake this morning, I believe. Good morning, Lynn. What is your question?
Good morning. I have a couple questions. I have a hydrangea. It's called Pink Sunset. And I'm wondering if that's a perennial.
Yes, I would guess it is. Most hydrangeas are perennial for us. Occasionally you get one that's a florist hydrangea that really isn't. But there are actually hundreds, I'm hesitant to say almost thousands now, of different kinds of hydrangea. There's been kind of a breeding frenzy with commercial breeders, and so we have so many different kinds. So, yes, I would assume it's a perennial. Now, some hydrangeas are a little slow to come up in the spring. Some of mine are just starting to grow. So I would give it, I'd give it another couple. Slow to come up in the spring. Some of mine are just starting to grow. So I would give it, I'd give it another couple of weeks, and then you can see where it's green and growing. And yes, it should be fine.
John, a listener wants to know the difference between, I can kind of relate to this one too, the difference between crabgrass and quackgrass.
So crabgrass is a summer annual grassy weed. It germinates, sets seed in the germinates in the spring, grows and develops throughout the summer, and then dies in the fall. Quackgrass is a creeping perennial that is that basically is a problematic weed. You know, can go pretty much anywhere, and really both of them can be fairly problematic. But one is an annual, one is a perennial. The quackgrass is much more difficult to control than the crabgrass. Crabgrass is really just ensuring a dense, healthy turf, and you'll just gradually thin out the crabgrass over time by just making an area less likely to have it. If you have quackgrass, it's particularly pretty tough to get rid of.
I put in a whole bunch of new sod in the backyard last year. It's doing really well, but I noticed that, and I'm glad this listener brought that up, that these are these blades of what I think are grass, some kind of grass, are lighter green, but they're not, you know, they have, it's probably about the, you know, 6-8 inches in diameter they're popping up. Those lighter leaves, is that quack or crabgrass? That's quackgrass, isn't it?
Well, both of them do have a little bit lighter leaf color, but lighter green. But I would say if you're seeing them grow significantly taller than the normal mowing height and it grows faster, it's probably quackgrass.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. Okay. Well, we'll have to deal with that. Yeah, with such a problem, right? We'll take care of that, and we'll take care of some business here and take a quick break and be right back. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, and we have many on the tech screen, we'll come back for those. 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, 53 degrees. We're heading to 73, and as I mentioned, overnight lows tonight and tomorrow around 52. But the rest of the week, our overnight lows will be in the 60s. You stay with us here. 53 degrees on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour welcoming your lawn or garden questions at 651-461-9226, either by phone or by text. And we have a bunch of both Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the University of Minnesota helping you out with your lawn or garden questions today. And, oh, my, we've got tons of folks. Let's grab some phone calls before we get back to the text messages. Larry is first up here from West St. Paul, I believe. Thanks, Larry. What is your question?
Good morning. I have two honeysuckles that last year I think had black spot and just about defoliated them. They're both coming back this year. They're greening up. Is there anything I should be aware of or should be doing?
I don't think so. There's a wide variety of honeysuckles. Some of them are more invasive than others, but I would wait and see if you have the same problem show up again. And then if you do, I would take pictures of it and send it into the Ask a Master Gardener line, which is the resource at the Extension Service for answering specific problems. You could also look up online at the extension.umn.edu website and see if you can match up any pictures that are there of your honeysuckle. But normally honeysuckle will be okay. It's usually an easy plant to grow.
Oh, good. All right. Larry, thank you. Joyce, I think, is next. Yeah, Joyce calling in from Hampton, I believe, this morning. Thanks for waiting, Joyce. What is your question?
Yes, I was wondering, I have potted hyacinth and calla lily plants that are done blooming. Can I plant the bulbs now, or what do I do?
You can plant them outside. It's the hyacinth probably will not rebloom. Calla lily might rebloom, but both of those, just the calla lily you'll have to bring indoors. That won't survive our winters outside. The hyacinth will, but it might not flower again. You might just see the foliage from it. But the calla lily, you can actually keep that as a plant if you want to take the trouble of bringing it in and storing the bulb through the winter.
Okay. This texture, John said, I did some dormant seeding last fall, and now I wonder if I should find a fertilizer that is food only for the new growth. What do you think?
Food only is, I think, if what the texter is wondering about is whether or not the fertilizer is going to have a weed and feed component or the weeding component, the herbicide included with it. I would definitely encourage you to use a fertilizer that does not have the weed component or the herbicide included. Just make sure that if you did seed last fall, if you are going to use a fertilizer, that it does not contain phosphorus because of the Minnesota phosphorus fertilizer law on lawns. But there's a number of different products out there that do not contain the herbicide that also do not contain phosphorus. So I would just call up your local lawn and garden center or really any place, or go visit them, and I'm sure you won't have any trouble finding a product that would help. But definitely recommend some fertilizer, especially after if they've started germinating, just to make sure that encourage them to get established.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. Barb is calling in this morning from Plymouth. Barb, good morning. What is your question for our guest?
I have two questions. The rabbits attacked my burning bush, stripped the bark all the way. Should I just cut them back now, or should I wait till to see if whatever they didn't attack actually flowers out?
This has been the worst year ever for rabbit damage, and they really do seem to love the burning bush. It's just amazing the devastation that's been done with rabbits. I've actually heard that the rabbit population now has decreased significantly because of starvation in the winter, and I'm thinking, how can this be when they ate everything in sight? If you haven't seen, if you don't see new growth on the branches, you can check and do a little bit of pruning, see if you could find any green tissue in there. Maybe wait one more week, but pretty soon you're going to be able to tell what's dead and alive. And burning bush can be pruned back to the ground sometimes and still come back. If it was a healthy plant, it could come back again from the base. So I wait maybe one more week, and then if you don't see green, yeah, you have to prune everything off and decide if you need to start over with a new plant.
Okay, before we have a look at that forecast,
let's... I have a lawn question.
Oh, go ahead.
I have a lawn question. My lawn question is my south side facing the street, which is a green, healthy lawn. It is very bumpy, and when I texted in last week, somebody told me it's probably because of earthworms. How do I deal with that? Because it's difficult to walk on, and it's difficult to cut. I have a walk-behind lawnmower.
Yeah, that's if it is that bumpy and it's that difficult to walk on, it could very well be earthworms, but generally those don't cause such an issue. But regardless, what I would consider doing is potentially either if you don't have a roller yourself, or if you do have you could potentially contract a company that has a roller that's just basically a heavy drum that they fill with water to come out and smooth if it's that uneven and it's that uncomfortable to even walk on. Another alternative is that you could potentially top dress with some soil if it's very kind of localized, if it's a very small area. You could just go out and lightly spread a layer of soil over time to try to smooth out that area because the grass will just continue to grow up through it. But generally, the earthworms are kind of a good thing, and we don't necessarily want to discourage them because they help aerify the soil naturally. So I would, even if it is the earthworms, I would just try to let them be, but try to help smooth things out after the fact.
Okay. I think we have time before the weather to grab another phone call. Harold in Roseville has been waiting to ask a question. Harold, thank you. What is your question?
Good morning. I have a question regarding chipmunks and squirrels digging in my pots and planters. Is there anything I can do to discourage them? I think I heard somewhere that you could use a certain kind of mulch. I don't know if it was a coconut shell mulch or what it was. Is there anything I can do to discourage them from digging in my pots and planters?
Oh, this is a good question, Harold, and I'm sure it's a very frustrating one. It's one I've personally had myself. I think actually there are mulches that actually attract these animals. And I don't know if it's the fragrance, the organic matter, or something. Somehow they think this is like a food source for them. And there are different mulches. They're rice hulls, they're coconut mulches. There's lots of different mulches growers are using now in an effort to avoid peat moss, which is a controversial horticultural growing media. But I have not been successful at doing anything other than a physical barrier, which is not going to look so good, but some type of a there are these nets, netting that you can put over. We see this mostly on fruit trees, so birds don't get in our fruit trees. But unless you put up some type of a barrier so that they cannot get in the pots, I don't know what else to tell you to do. And maybe some of our listeners know things that are mulches that are really good, but it's just, I think that they're looking for food sources and attracted to the growing media itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you what, that is an issue. Let's do this. Let's take a break for weather. We have about another half hour of the show to go. Lawn and Garden Questions at 651. Yeah, that is an issue. Let's do this. Let's take a break for weather. We have about another half hour of the show to go. Lawn and Garden Questions at 651-461-9226. Here on News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, you have Mary Meyer and John Traffy from the University of Minnesota. We're talking lawns and gardens. Specifically, if you have especially a turf question for John Traffy, this is your day to get that answer. Mary and John, we have so many text messages. Do you have about three more days to spend here? let's see. Where do we go from here? Oh, here's one about a fertilizer using fish parts. Does that make good fertilizer in vegetable gardens?
It probably does. That sounds a little vague on what it is, but yes, the fish emulsion is a fertilizer that you can buy. And yes, that's one of our organic fertilizers. It usually will say on the label what the proportion is of nutrients, but yes, I think that's okay. You know, it's always important to read the label because it will tell you, hopefully, what the actual nutrients are that's in the fertilizer. But I think it should be okay.
I think this listener specifically is a fisher person, and they're talking about, from what I can discern from the text, that they're talking about what they don't eat. Can they put that? You know, so we're talking about real fish.
Yeah, using their own fertilizer. Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's probably okay. Of course, that's historically one of the things that the Native Americans did, realizing that, you know, there are multiple sources of organic matter. Sure. that that will help plants. So, yeah, the thing is there, it depends on the age. So it's all of that fresh organic matter needs to be partially decomposed and incorporated into the soil. So you could put that in there, but I would certainly mix it in with the soil.
Okay. I am reminded that today, would you please announce the Washington County Master Gardeners Plant Sale and Garden Expo from 10 to 3 at the Washington County Fairgrounds. Boy, do they have a nice day for that.
This and also, it's Dakota County, Hennepin County, Ramsey counties. So there's plant sales near you. So, yes, if you want to just Google Plant Sales Master Gardeners Minnesota, I think you'll see a lot of opportunity today. Yes.
Excellent. One more, then I have a bunch of turf questions. How do I keep my hanging plants from shriveling up and dying by August?
Well, it's probably water, because anything that's in a container needs water daily once we get to the hot summer. And if it's really in full sun conditions and a small container, it might be twice a day that you have to water it. So watering can be the limiting factor, and you just have to, really pay attention to that.
This listener wants to know your opinion on using corrugated plastic tubes placed on newly planted trees for protection and to accelerate vertical growth. Also, could you comment on the best herbicide to use on the little violet flowering lawn weed, not Creeping Charlie, that is Trimec resistant? Your program on Saturday mornings is excellent.
I'll do the first one. John can do the Trimec one. So protection for trees, especially fruit trees from rabbits, et cetera, is really helpful. So, yes, I do protection on fruit trees, and I do it for bark frost cracks and bark cracking on thin bark trees like maples. But once they get older, especially the maples, they don't need it. But young trees, yes, you just want to put that on. So it's mostly protection for animals. And as the tree grows, you have to be careful and take it off.
Okay.
And related to the violet flowers, coincidentally is a wild violet plant. So originally an ornamental that was brought here or that's been naturalized. That is a particularly difficult to control weed, but just like you had mentioned, it's not Creeping Charlie, but the same product that we recommend for controlling Creeping Charlie also works very well and is the recommended product for wild violets, and that's triclopyr is the active ingredient in that. So it's not the brand name or the label name. It's the active ingredient that is that's actually working against the wild violet. TRICLOPYR, triclopyr is the active ingredient. Should work pretty well.
Very good. Next question. Text question. What steps are next after treating grubs in my lawn? Should I overseed?
Yeah, so grubs, if you have already treated for grubs, typically we recommend doing that a little bit later in the summer. If the caller is referring to putting down a grub preventer, for example, typically we prefer to do that a little bit later in the summer, in late June, early July. But as far as the upcoming steps to do is really just try to, just encourage a healthy lawn. So in terms of, mowing it some, as it's needed, trying to raise the mowing height, like I had mentioned earlier, is a great step to do. But otherwise, it's really just, allowing the lawn just to grow and enjoy the weather like we are.
Okay. This listener says this: I planted a Regent serviceberry shrub last spring, put wire fencing around it for the winter. Can I take the fencing down now or leave it up until the shrub is larger and more established? The shrub is densely foliated and around 2 by 2 feet right now. Thank you.
Yes, a wonderful plant, the Regent's serviceberry, great for wildlife. Bunnies love this. So the protection really is for the rabbits. And if you have no rabbits, you probably can take off the barrier there. But I actually did the same thing. I got three Regents and they look beautiful, but I'm going to leave my barrier up because I have so many rabbits around. So they need to get really well established and be able to take some browsing with the rabbits.
Next text for John. I believe the voles did a lot of damage to my lawn over the winter. I raked up the loose dead grass a couple of weeks ago, but no new grass has come up. What should I do?
You know, at this point, if you still have the trails or the burrows, tunnels from the voles still present, I would, at this point, you've already removed the above ground dead leaf litter. At this point, I would consider fertilizing if it's that much of an issue. I know this year was particularly bad for the voles. I think just, undergoing just a normal spring fertilizer application, and we have some recommendations on the extension.umn.edu site on how to fertilize your lawn and when to do it and how much to fertilize. But I would just consider fertilizing to allow the lawn to try to grow out of it. Otherwise, just try to be a little bit patient. The lawn typically should be able to recover and grow out of that vole damage.
Here's one we get quite often, and I'm sure you do too. How can I get mushrooms out of my lawn where a tree was cut down?
Yeah, so the mushrooms themselves oftentimes are a symptom of what we call fairy ring. So it's just a basidiomycete. Typically, there's no damage. There can be in like golf course type settings or really sandy soil. Sometimes it'll be a little bit hydrophobic and it might dry out a little faster than the rest of the lawn. But generally, the white mushrooms are really harmless. You can go and just step them down if you want or just knock them over as you're mowing. But really, there's really nothing you can do about it. Unfortunately, there's not really any chemical or cultural practices that can really be done. It's a soil-borne fungi.
Okay. This listener says, I planted a new maple tree last July and covered the bottom with wood mulch. This spring, I changed the mulch from wood to rubber mulch. When I took the wood mulch up, there was a lot of small/fine roots that I may have disturbed. Do you think that I damaged the tree?
Hopefully not. The trees really have the majority of their roots in the top, even 18 inches. Young trees do rely heavily on the new root systems and smaller roots that you'll see. But hopefully not. I would still pay attention to watering this plant because of the drought conditions that we had. We still could see plants die this year from the drought conditions from last year. Yeah, so we tend to forget this. So I would pay attention to watering the plant. And, you don't need... Yeah, so we tend to forget this. So I would pay attention to watering the plant. And, you don't need that much mulch on top of the roots. It's better to have a mulch than have your lawnmower go up there and hit the trunk of the tree. So a mulch around the trunk so you don't get near it with a mower is a good idea. But, 1 to 2 inches is enough. And then once you have that down, yeah, just leave it alone.
Okay. Let's take a quick break and be right back with the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show. 651-461-9226. Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the U of M helping you out this morning here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Just a reminder, coming along next hour, Andy Lindis will be with us. We'll be talking home improvement. We'll be taking any kind of questions related to home improvement next hour here on CCO. In the meantime, if you just joined us, Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the U of M are answering those questions today. And you know what we haven't mentioned, what I did not bring up, I love to do it because I love to be there, is the Arboretum. This has to be one... Well, it's any time really of the year I love to go there, but this has got to be a great time.
It's a fabulous time. The tulips are magnificent this year with many, many different kinds of tulips. I just would say that if anybody goes there to see the tulips, I guarantee you'll find a tulip you didn't see before because they're just a huge diversity of tulips. That's what the collection is this year, and very bright and colorful. And the crab apples are out, and the lilacs are out, and the red buds are just finishing, and there's so many things to see. So it's a fabulous time to go to the Arboretum. You still do need to make a reservation, but I looked this morning. There are plenty of open slots for making a reservation at the Arboretum. So great spot to visit.
Yeah, do it online, and you will be so glad. You will be making repeat trips, and you might even want to join the Arboretum, become a member. Easy right. to do. And by the way, another thing I know Mary mentioned it earlier today, is great reading, great resource, is the University of Minnesota Extension website. That's extension.umn.edu. Check it out when you have a chance, and I think you'll really enjoy it. I was using it myself this past week for some ideas. In the meantime, let's see how many folks we can help out here before we run out of time. This text says, our city newsletter considers euonymus invasive. Is that right?
Well, there are many different kinds of euonymus, and what's invasive is a plant that will self-seed or come up like buckthorn does. We all know how much of a problem buckthorn is. And many times we are just learning what plants will become invasive. So if your city is saying it's a problem, that's because it's been documented and there's places where they're having to remove it where it wasn't planted. So I'd be very careful about what euonymus you have in your yard, and then watching if you have any kind of wild areas nearby to make sure that it's not coming and growing in those areas.
Here's a text that I wonder if you or John ever heard of this before. Lawn question, my neighbor spread sugar on his lawn as a fertilizer, and it looked healthy and green. I'm afraid it could attract ants. What are your thoughts about using sugar as a fertilizer?
Sugar is actually, it's been used in traditional row crop agriculture as a starter fertilizer for decades. Mm. So as molasses is what is often used. There is actually some benefit that's out there for that. But in terms of a lawn, it's most sugar is broken down or mineralized by soil microbes within a few hours. So the benefit is really marginal. But if you were to there could be some very marginal benefit if it was like a new establishment, but not necessarily like table sugar. It would have to be a little bit more of a complex sugar substrate like molasses. But even then, it's a little bit messy, and like you said, it might end up attracting other things that you don't necessarily want there.
Interesting. This listener has a large area of dead grass. They were able to pull it up in big chunks, kind of like dead sod. Do you think this was caused by grubs?
It could very well be from grubs. The May June beetle is the grubs are actively feeding right now up near the surface. Well, really, a lot of different white grubs are. If you pull back that sod that seems to just kind of pull up in really big chunks or rolls of pieces, you should be able to find them, or you'll see paw prints from things like raccoons, possums, skunks that were digging. And that's oftentimes what's rolling those back. So you should be able to see, if you see more than like 6 white grubs or so per square foot, that's when I would consider treating that area in order to try to remove that stress on the lawn.
Okay. Mary, this listener says, the bark has been stripped off the largest branches of my lilacs. Do they need removal, do you think?
Oh, it's hard to say. I would just wait and see how they grow. If the bark is totally gone all the way around a branch, then yeah, usually that means that the branch is going to be dead. Partially, if it's only one side, it might still live. Lilacs are amazing that you can rejuvenate them if the plants are healthy. Around the grass collection where I work at the Arboretum, we have an old lilac hedge, and every few, well, maybe 10 or 15 years, they do what's called renovation or rejuvenation pruning, and prune it down to the ground. and it is healthy and in full sun and in good conditions, and so that's always come back. So if your plant is really healthy, you can take off, cut it back to the ground, and lilacs can rejuvenate if they're healthy plants.
This other listener wants to know, what's the best time to relocate rhubarb plants?
Well, rhubarb is really, usually it's quite tough. I would actually think about moving it in early spring just as it's starting to grow. And then you'll have to wait a couple of years till it gets itself reestablished. But it's it, you know, when you say the southern listener wants to know, rhubarb doesn't grow well in hot conditions. So it's rhubarb and lilacs, these are the things we could grow well in Minnesota. So you can't really grow it well in hot conditions, but maybe the person has lived in the South, he's now here, and I would say if you have sunny conditions, you can move it this time of year, but I'm about ready to pick my rhubarb to make some pie.
Oh, I'll be over.
Yeah.
I love that. I think we only have 2 minutes, actually less than 2 minutes now, John and Mary. Let's see if we can't pick up on this one. We mentioned it earlier. If one has quackgrass, how do we get rid of it?
Unfortunately, quackgrass can only be controlled with a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate. So if you're not keen on trying to kill out everything in that area and trying to replant it, and that's a several months long process because the quackgrass has underground creeping rhizomes that can just take a long time for that herbicide to work through them, and sometimes multiple applications. If you can't wait for that, you don't want to wait for that, sometimes it's really just to can't beat them, join them type of situation, and just accept that it's going to be there.
And as far as pre-emergence, is this the time? Are we past it, or what's the deal with that? A couple of people want to know.
Great question. We're a little bit past the crabgrass pre-emergence or summer annual pre-emergence. So at this point, I would just plan on not applying any. Or if you do, there's some that have pre- and post-activity, like dithiopyr is the active ingredient. But those have kind of marginal activity. I would just focus on good cultural practices going into the summer, and then hit it next fall and having a healthy lawn then.
Excellent. We're out of time. Mary and John, always a pleasure. Let's do this again. Thank you. You guys have a good week. Enjoy the beautiful weather. And we'll talk again
soon.
Thanks so much. Mary Meyer and John Trappe from the University of Minnesota. Now, get those home improvement questions ready. But before we do, check out the University of Minnesota website, extension.umn.edu, get to the Arboretum. You're going to love it. Home improvement next hour on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Stay with us.